Hello, my name's Charlotte and I'm an addict. It's weird speaking in this thing. I hate the sound of my own voice anyway, and it's like, oh. I am nervous, and I was talking to my mom about a quarter of an hour ago, and I said, the reason I'm nervous is because I don't think I can put into words, I don't know if I can express in words what my recovery has been like. I came from a very, very dark place in the end. I'm just over 2 years clean. At the end, I was street homeless, and I was addicted to crack and heroin and alcohol. And everything had gone. Everything had gone. And I am one of those addicts that I'm stubborn as hell, and it took me to get to that place to come back. And I was trying to, this chair has been going round and round in my head, obviously, since Claire asked me to do it. And I think what it was, I thought today, it suddenly came to me, I had, you know, it's this whole thing about surrender. I had to give up. And that was what happened. I gave up. I stopped trying. I couldn't try to help myself anymore. I was sitting on the edge of a pavement, the same clothes I'd worn for the last 5 days, really ill. I'd walked for a couple of hours to get to a homeless place. I sat in the office there for 4 hours, and they said to me, look, there are a lot of homeless people out there, you know, sorry. And something inside me kept going. There have been numerous overdoses, suicide attempts, all of that, but all I can say is right at the end, something kicked in, and it was this. It was that I didn't want to die. It was that simple. And I was going to, and I've got two little boys, and I didn't want to leave them. And I was listening when Michael did the reading, and it said about addiction, and it says, a cunning enemy of life. And when I hear the readings, very often in meetings, something will jump out at me that I need to hear in that particular meeting or on that day. And it was just doing this chair, and I want to put a perspective on my illness, all of this illness. And that's what it's been for me. And when I came to do my step four, I was talking to someone earlier, the way I do my steps is I put them off for ages, and then I sit in not a great place, and then I start working, and then I think, God, this is weird, I feel fine now, this is great, you know. And before I started my step four, I pulled out this big suitcase full of photographs, and I was looking at all of them, and this is really strange for me, because the last 2 years of my life, I can safely say I felt more alive than I have throughout my life. And I felt more pain, and I have felt more joy, and I felt braver than I felt in all my life. And I was thinking, yeah, that's straight. And it's not. It's because I am not anesthetized. I am not dulling my soul and my brain and my heart with something that was going to kill me. When I came into the rooms, as I said, I was beaten. I've done so many, I did a lot of rehabs, a lot of detoxes. And as I said, it took me to get into that place to come into the rooms. I had, I think, 3 months clean about 3 years ago when I'd come out of a detox in Plymouth, a heroin detox. And I tried to get it together without knowledge of this program or the fellowship. And this great phrase, contempt prior to investigation, was exactly what I had. And I heard about the fellowship, and I thought it all sounded a bit like a bit Hey Nonny Nonny and a bit sort of Lord of the Rings, and I thought the whole thing was just, you know. And I was insane for 3 months, basically. You know, I was I got myself a flat together near my boys, I got a job, I relapsed after 3 months, and the job I was working in, I ended up pocketing loads of cash at the end of the day, using, you know, I blacked out in the street opposite where I worked, you know, going home, you know, just shit, just sort of snorting heroin at work under the CCTV camera, and, you know, I mean, really good move. And but when I came in, I could, the thing about similarities and differences, it wasn't, I saw the differences in myself. The rest of you, I thought, were fine, you know, all cool, great, wonderful. When I looked at myself, I thought, shit, you know, I don't belong here. You know, I went straight from alcohol to, I've always done a lot of coke through the years, but I went from alcohol, cross-addicted, straight to crack and heroin. I've never puffed, I've never enjoyed it. So therefore, I thought, I don't belong. But what I did was, I was so glad to hear people talking. I sat at the back quite a lot at the beginning and listened. And I heard people describing exactly how I had felt, the darkness of it all, the horror. And I knew, it's such a corny thing, but I really did feel like I'd come home. And I still get it. If I've had a bad day, stuff's gone wrong, I will come into a meeting and my shoulders will relax. They're not relaxed now because I'm shit scared, but my shoulders often, I'll get into a meeting and I just think, whew, you know, sand runs out of my toes. I just think, you know, I'm home and this is where I belong. And long may it last. To be, you know, I was thinking this morning, this whole thing for me has been about healing and it's been about growth. And I was insane when I came in, you know, absolutely insane. And a bit about my background, I can't gain the differences and similarities. I couldn't figure out. I come from a large, very loving family. You know, I had a beautiful childhood. My mum's an artist. It was very golden. My dad pulled us out of London when I was about three. We lived in the country. And the thing that happened in our family was that tragedy kind of befell. When I was about 14, my father started getting very confused and his memory started going. And he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's when I was 17 or 18. And he died 6 years ago on the 2nd of this month. And it was a very long time. He was a young man to have it. And basically the family, you know, from the moment he was diagnosed with it and before, it was like being on quicksand. All the addict traits were in me. You know, I'm very impulsive. I think, you know, even as a young child, I thought if I got what I wanted, my life would be whole. You know, and I was thinking again, most of this addiction for me has been, all those years in addiction have been based on desire and gratification. And that's been around, you know, whatever it was, if it's people, drugs, you know, money, whatever. And that is what I try to learn to... Well, I don't try to learn it. This is what I'm learning through doing step work with a really good sponsor, to sort of quell a bit is the best way I can put it. I've got two little boys. Well, basically what happened was I knew I was in trouble with alcohol. You know, the first time my parents would have people for dinner, next morning everything would be down on the table. My sister would be eating the after eights and I'd be necking the whatever wine was left, you know, and I was 8 years old then. And it carried on, and I knew I was again in trouble with it at about 16. Started doing coke when I was about 17. Crash, bang, wallop, the whole way through. I behaved really erratically. Was very full of shame. I hid things. Hid, always. And I put myself in situations. I begged my parents to allow me to go to the school my brothers were at, and I ended up being the only girl in a school of 200 boys, and it was really lonely. And I had asked and asked and begged, and always when my mum said, "Are you all right?" I'd go, "I'm fine." And that has been something I'd done the whole way through until the end when I said, "I'm not fine, I need help." And this is what it's been like ever since I got into the fellowship. I can ask for help. And because you know, it astounds me the change in people, you know, all of us, you know, vagabond ways and behaving as I used to behave and lying and cheating and so self-obsessed. I couldn't help myself, let alone anyone else. And we come into this thing and there are people to help us if we ask. And I got married really young to a man I will have more love and respect for until the day I die, because he kept our two little boys safe. You know, and I knew when I walked down the aisle with him that I was doing him a disservice, because I stood in front of a God I believed in then and I believe in now, and I promised to love and honor him until the day I died, and I was too ill. But you know, what are you going to say? You know, sorry, darling, you know, I can't marry you because I'm an accident waiting to happen. And, you know, and I knew it, but, you know, I didn't know why I was. And anyway, shortly after our second child was born, I crashed. We moved out of London and I had everything I wanted in terms of beautiful house, really lovely husband, these two gorgeous children, everything. And I fell to bits and I went seriously insane. I was put into my first treatment centre and I relapsed immediately after it. Proceeded to drink myself to death. Hooked up with a crack addict then. Didn't know what he was doing. You know, just it was madness. And then... was dying, was given about 6 weeks to live or something when I went into my second major treatment center and, as I said, stopped drinking then. But I met someone in there who was a crack addict, and we came out, and I started doing a ton of coke, ton of crack, and then a ton of heroin. And it was the loneliest time of my life. And it was a violent relationship with somebody who I love very much, but who was as ill as I was. And it was so dark, and the real darkness was the loss of who I knew I was. And I was walking away from myself, and I was walking away from my children. And I was this thing about, you know, the step four, when they talk about morality, and it's not morals as we kind of think about it. For me, my morality is walking away from my core beliefs, from being a loving person, from being an honest person, from being around loving and honest people who are my old friends and my family. I stepped into a world that was really dark, and it was mostly my world that was really dark. And still the front's up, I was still working, you know, and it just, my world spiraled into nothing, and it got tiny. And these two tiny little boys, and all they wanted was their mom, and I wasn't there for them. And very recently, I was talking to my ex-husband. We're really, really close. As I said, he's a very kind and wise and loving man. And all he's ever wanted was for me to be well and for the children to have their mum back. And that speaks volumes for him. And we were coming back from, it was my kids' parents' evening a couple of nights ago, and we were coming back. And it's the first time I've asked him, been brave enough to ask him how the children were when I was out there. And it was really painful. He said, you know, Jack, who's now 12, he said he was very thin. He was having nosebleeds. He said there was part of him that had shut down, that he wouldn't touch anyone. My little one, Theo, who's 10 now, he said was wetting the bed constantly, lived in a fantasy world. He's an amazing pianist, so he would not get off a piano, played music all the time. And that was up until 2 years ago. And the change in all of us, where they say recovery is a family illness and a family recovery, the ripple effect. And I have to be sensitive around this, because I know that there are people who aren't with their children now and who they've been taken away. But I've also seen people who've stayed clean, and through the years their families come back to them. So I can't dismiss what's happened to me around the people I love. And my two boys are in blinding shape. And, you know, I am. And I was thinking about this thing about joys of recovery. For me, when I came in, I'd hear people say, I've got this job and I've got this flat and blah, blah. And I think that's fantastic, you know, good for you, but I can't ever see it happening for me. I've got a bus pass and 20p, you know, sort of go figure what's going to, you know. And I do live in a lovely place now that I've worked hard to get. I work in a job I adore. I'm a portrait artist, so that reconnection with the creative side for myself is fantastic. But the whole, you know, and I work my steps. I'm on my step 8 now. And as I say, each time I do a step, I'm amazed. And with a step 8, it was like the pain of looking at the past and the damage I've done. I suddenly stepped back from it and thought, but hang on, in the last 2 years, the damage I haven't done. You know, it's the yin and yang of all of this. I have not caused pain and chaos in the last 2 years to the best of my extent. Obviously, we're human beings. We cause pain, and pain is caused to us. But to the best of my ability, I haven't. And the real joy, the one thing for me, the biggest one was I climbed into, when I was about a year in recovery, and I went to climb into the bottom bunk of my kids' beds, and my son Jack was asleep, and I put my arms around him and lay there for about 15 minutes. And I was trying to figure out how I was going to express in words how that felt. And as I was doing it, I was plugging my charger into my mobile phone, and it pinged up, and it just went, optimized charging. And I thought, yeah, that's it. That's the one. And I think the whole of my recovery has been like optimized charging. I'm being charged with my higher power, this faith that I am building on. I have something now which has, through all the darkness and the suffering, something has lodged itself in me, without a doubt, kind of imperceptibly, it's lodged itself in me. And I have the choice to invest it with whatever goodness I choose to. And I have found that whatever I give my energy to, or my power to, grows. And where I gave all my power and my energy to using, to, you know, the insanity of, you know, all the crack used late, you know, early as the morning prayer, all of it, Where I give power to the darkness grows. Where I give power to the light grows. And that has been, and I have the tools, and I have a sponsor, and I have steps to work through. And I will end on this, actually. My brother, I have two brothers, one who's in recovery and one who's not. So basically, my mum's got two of her children back since my father's death through this fellowship. But my other brother, who I love to bits, I love all my family, but my brother came in, I was 10 months in this vicarage, a sort of third stage thing, and my brother walked into my room and he picked up the working guide. And I've shared this before, but it moved me so much because he looked at it and he went, Charlie, he went, you know, I've got cellars in my heart that will never be unlocked. I don't know, there are dark places in me that I can't unlock because I don't know how to. And he said, you've got this. And he said, you are so lucky that you have a means to unlock all the darkness. You can look into all those places and figure it out. But I can only do that with this faith I have in my in this wonderful thing that is called a higher power or God or whatever we choose to do it, power in the rooms, whatever, and this fellowship and a means to work through it. And my life has turned around and I can't stop doing this because I have no doubt from what I've heard that if I stop working and I stop doing what I'm doing, I stop doing service, I stop going to meetings, I stop listening, I stop giving, I will back in the darkness that is my head because I am an addict. And my head gets very dark unless I can help it. And I'll leave it at that.